This is the fourth interview with Ernestine Kettler on February 14, 1973. The interview begins with a discussion of her move to Butte, Montana, where she again worked for the IWW in their office there. From there, she went to Chicago and worked at the IWW headquarters. She was in Chicago during the 1923-1924 internal battle, but has no recollection of the fight. At that time, she apparently joined the IWW, although she had been involved with them previously, and her sympathies was with them. She had never joined them until then. She then went to New York, where she worked for a committee of the Communist Party. This apparently was a business involved in the distribution of films from the Soviet Union. They wanted her to work for the Communist Party trade union movement, but she felt that their ideas were contrary to her concepts of socialism. She eventually returned to Seattle, where she remarried, and then to San Francisco, where a very quiet period of her life began. She led a rather domestic, isolated life during this time, and her political activity seemed to have been curtailed. After her husband died in 1936, she went back to New York for a year and a half, where she joined the Office Employees Union. On her return to San Francisco in 1938, she became rather actively involved with the union and discusses the fight within the union with the communists. In a later part of the interview, she details at length this fight and the eventual split in the union. She then became gradually involved with the Socialist Workers' Party, and this became the focus of her social and political life. The interview concludes with her new involvement in the feminist movement and her attitudes towards it.
Butte in 1923, I think. And in 1924, I was in Chicago. I was in Michigan only about a few weeks, so that's... And that was a part of my domestic experience. You know, I had nothing to do with my political activities. So, I don't know. There's nothing there.
You knew nothing about his background?
Well, all I remember about his background was that he was first a newspaper man. Then his eyes became quite bad and he couldn't stay with it. And he got involved in the IWW struggle. How he got involved, I don't recall. He might have told me the whole story.
But he never talked about being in the South at all.
Well, he was, to my knowledge, it was east of Seattle, wherever he was. And I think he had been South. You know, the last that I heard from him was about 12 years ago. And he was then in Georgia. So he must have been familiar with the South and had gone there after our breakup. Mm-hmm. Now, breakup took place in 25. And he just disappeared from the IWW then. He just disappeared. I didn't know where he was.
Well, before you were divorced, even?
Yeah, before I got the divorce, and he was no place to be found that I can recall. Generally, the other mate has to answer the summons for a divorce, and I just don't remember. I don't remember that part of it at all. He might have been in Michigan at that time. That's where he was. He was born in Michigan. His relatives, his mother and father were in Michigan, and so were, you know, one sister was in Chicago, and two others were in Michigan, and that's all I remember. So he might have stayed there for a while and then gone traveling again.
Now, when you left Washington essentially because for personal reasons.
Yes, we didn't get along. We were just unsuited. He was rabidly jealous, you know. It was just an impossible situation.
So your main reason for leaving the Seattle area then was just to get...
Well, I heard about this job. There was nothing there to hold me, you know. I was, you might say, a freelancer, so I could go any place. And I thought of going back to New York, so I made it in slow steps. Mm-hmm. I think that I was in Butte a little over a year and a half, and in Chicago perhaps about 6 months.
Now, in Butte, were there any strikes going on or anything at the time you were there?
No.
You
were calling it? No, just quiet in both places.
And you were doing office work for the IWW?
And I was doing it for the IWW in Butte, the entire time that I was in Butte. And then I went east. I didn't have to go, but I was restless. I wanted to go back to New York. And is this on now? Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Does it take my low voice at this time? It does. And so I went to Chicago, and while there I got this job in the IWW headquarters. And during that period they had this conference on the political arguments between the two factions in the IWW, and they used me as a stenographer to take notes of the conference, which I did. And from there,
do you recall much about the conference?
I don't remember. Possibly I didn't even understand it. So far as I recall, it was actually between the sympathizers of the Soviet Union and the hard-boiled anti-political faction in the IWW. And it was a bitter conference, I remember that.
Now, was this a conference prior to the 1924 convention then?
Well, it must have been, because it was not a convention. Or this was a committee meeting before the convention. I don't recall, I didn't go to the convention, I don't recall it. That was in 1924, that's when I was in Chicago.
Now, was there a lot of personal animosity?
Well, there was, yeah. It was really a good deal of, there was a good deal of it even before I left Seattle. Because even there, there were Soviet sympathizers working for the IWW. And, you know, working in a very high capacity for it. And the split probably happened there, you know. And it happened throughout the entire country. New York City, Chicago, Seattle, they were the main ports of United States. And I'm just sorry, I wish I could tell you more, but obviously I didn't quite understand their arguments. And see, this is where my immaturity showed up, you know. And so that I can't tell you more about it.
No.
And as well as that I do not remember it.
Mm-hmm. You know.
I wasn't a dyed-in-the-wool IWW. In fact, I criticize its anti-political stance very much, you know, even in those days. But the IWW has nevertheless sort of infected my political views, you know. But, I mean, I'm very sympathetic to it even today. But it's really a dying organization. And that doesn't mean that it may not arise again, but in a different form, and in a form which would include political activity, because it's impossible to even visualize any kind of society without a political attitude. You know. I use politics in a quite different sense from the way it is used today. Today it's really hypocritical. But a political action exists in all organizational forms and in all societies. And certainly political action exists in the communist countries, you know, no matter how they may be induced to accept the industrial society, you know. You just can't separate. To me, you know, it's inconceivable that the IWWR, incapable of differentiating between IWW politics and capitalist politics, and that they lump all politics together. They have a very superficial definition of politics in their attitude. And this has been really my difference with the IWW.
Now, when you were working in the offices of these places, you were in the bookkeepers and stenographers?
Yeah, I was doing this. Yes. Uh-huh. I was working in the office, and I was an office worker. I took shorthand, typed, made entries. You know, it was a paying organization, and with a dues paying organization. So I did just about everything there, possibly much more in the bookkeeping line than in the shorthand line. My friend Alicia, who persuaded me to come there, was an excellent stenographer, and she couldn't understand bookkeeping at all. Figures were just an enigma to her. So that was my job.
Were you always paid, or were there problems with sometimes not being able to help?
No, I was always paid. Mm-hmm. I was paid for that work in Butte, Montana, and I was also paid in Chicago. In Chicago, they had quite a number of workers. It was a big place. That was the headquarters of the entire organization, and they had something like 30 people working there, including everyone. Mm-hmm. The offices of the various unions and the president and the vice president and secretary and God knows how many more. I don't know if they had presidents and vice presidents. They had secretaries and their secretaries, and I was one of them.
Do you remember anything at all about that bookkeepers and stenographers union?
I joined it in Seattle, but then when I left, and part of the time I didn't work while I was in Seattle, I joined the IWW, because I was not a member of it. Even after marrying Emerson, I did not become a member of it. I didn't join the IWW until I worked for them.
I
see. So you might say that was just an economic necessity.
Because they didn't have any, the clerical workers weren't really organizing in IWW.
Well, no, but you just join the local to which, for whom you work, you know.
I see.
And that's how I joined it. And I know I was also a member when I went to Chicago. I stayed a member until I quit, and I went back to New York. So that in that sense, I was not really an ideological member of the IWW.
Now, at this time, would you say you still identified yourself as a feminist?
I've always identified myself as a feminist. It was just simply, to me, it's a curious question. Because I've never been anything else but a feminist in my views, and I had many arguments regarding it with men especially, not with women. Don't forget, I was in the radical movement, and the women certainly were feminists, you know. But the men had many arguments against it, and I just couldn't accept that. You know. So my feminism actually... whatever activity I performed in it was actually in arguing with people and trying to convince them of some of their hypocritical attitudes. I don't like to use the word chauvinist because it's been played to death. You know, it becomes meaningless after a while. Like the policemen who are called pigs, you know. Well, you think of a pig as a very good eating animal. And they may eat like pigs, but what on earth is a pig? So, you know, I mean, I look upon that word as badly misused, you know, or badly used.
So you were really attempting to influence the radical movements in which you were participating to accept a feminist?
Well, you know, to the extent, you see, my only arguments were with individuals. I didn't, after my experience in Washington, D.C., I didn't try, I didn't discuss that subject very much. To me, the vote had become more of a danger than a benefit, you know, because, well, in the sense that people were voting wrongly, they were continually maintaining a capitalist system, they were forever critical of the capitalist system, and still at each election, they use that vote to vote the same people in, you know. So how could I be happy about having won the vote, you know? I really, it was immaterial to me, for the reason that if there was a socialist candidate, I voted for a socialist candidate. I never split my vote. I don't think in my life I voted for a Democratic candidate. Never in my whole life. Not even during the Depression years where so many people were enamored with President Roosevelt, you know, and I mean they were enamored with him, because it was during his administration that many reforms were legislated, and many good reforms too. But of course I look upon these reforms as a part of the capitalist responsibility for their own system. If they wanted their system to survive, they simply have to consider the necessity for reforms so that people can buy back the goods that they produce, you know. And also that we are not an animalistic world. We really are a humanistic world, but trade and money and position play a very important role in fighting, you know, finding themselves in contradiction with humanism. I mean, this is my attitude, and I get some very bad arguments from some severe arguments of some of my friends who think that I ought to look upon the capitalists as evil-minded people, you know. And I just simply can't analyze it at such a low level of subjectivity, you know.
Well, did you then see your major, did your major political activity then shift basically around this time period in the 20s to the Socialist Party?
In the 20s? Mm-hmm. No, I think it was more to the IWW. Mm-hmm. I was much more in contact with them than I was with socialists. And many of my close friends were anarchists. Mm-hmm.
Now, what about after the essential dissolution of the IWW in the mid-20s?
Well, after that, I will have to confess that I was, as a friend once said, sitting on a fence, you know, and again between the anarchism and socialism. But I was not active in either movement. I was connected with these people, but I was not active in it. In fact, I didn't become truly political until 1938.
Well, now.
And in 1938, I met the Trotskyists, and at that time began my true education in political theory.
Now, when you went back to New York, then it was about 24.
Yes.
You went from Chicago back to New York.
Yes. It was in 24, about the latter part of, you know, I get a little confused, but it wasn't, yeah, it must have been in 24, because I know I went to Butte in 23, and I was in Chicago in 24, and in New York in 25, but it seems to me that in 25 I returned back west.
Well, how long did you stay in New York?
Well, this is what I can't remember.
That you worked in New York?
I worked in New York, yes.
What kind of work were you doing?
Well, I'll tell you frankly, I worked for a committee of the Communist Party. believe it or not.
As you were paid.
I was paid. Yeah, this was the a motion picture distribution. I can't remember what it was called.
Was it called something?
Like a Beast, and it's the only picture that I can remember. They had one on TV, but it was altogether different. I didn't see
it. But it was a business. It wasn't.
It was a business, you know, distributing Russian films throughout the United States. You know.
But it was controlled by the Communist Party. USA.
Well, it was certainly. It was. This was a Communist Party department of some kind. Mm-hmm. And of course, I met a number of communists, and I learned quite a bit about communism during those years.
Well, what was your attitude towards the Soviet Union at this point when you went back to New York?
Oh, it was, frankly, I don't see that it was any different than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same attitude. In fact, they were much more enthusiastic then because it was very shortly after the Russian Revolution. But at the same time, that was before the government began to collectivize the land, wasn't it?
You went back just about when you went back to New York was just about the time of Lenin's death.
Lenin's
death.
Was it in 25? I thought it was 24.
24. So when you became involved with the communists, there was already the shift. What was your own attitude towards the Soviet Union?
I was opposed to communism. I didn't like their authoritarianism. And I noticed that what they were doing in New York were colonizing them in certain industries. And they wanted to do the same thing with me. And I turned it down. I refused it. I discussed it with some of my anarchist friends or some non-aligned political friends. And they told me to refuse it, and I refused it.
What was it that they wanted you to do?
I don't remember. In some
union,
it might have been the Ladies' Garment Workers Union, in the office of some union. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing that for years, you know, colonizing people in various unions, you know, trying to influence the policies of those unions. And I just turned it down.
So what you worked for was actually a business organization.
This was a business. I had a great deal of sympathy for the IWW, but these jobs opened up and they were paying jobs, you know, so I worked for them. I had a great deal in common with them. But I had nothing in common with the communists. I attended some of their classes and I just couldn't. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't. It just seemed contrary to my concept of what a socialist society should be. And I didn't understand it too either. I wasn't political enough in those days to understand our objections to communism. And they weren't anywhere near the uneducated communists that they are today. They were very educated people, but they were too educated for me.
So you worked for this outfit the whole time you were in New York?
Yes, I did. And then I know that summer I went to Madison, Wisconsin and took a summer course in two subjects, I think German and history. Ancient history, and I was there about 8 weeks, I believe, and then returned to Seattle.
Why did you decide to leave New York and go back to Seattle again? Do you remember?
Well, you know, once you live on the West Coast, you can't stand the East Coast anymore. I couldn't stand the extreme cold of the winters there, and I couldn't stand the thunderstorms and the heat in summers. So I went back to Seattle, and I've been back here ever since.
Now, what was your plan when you went back to Seattle? Did you have any definite idea in mind as to what you were going to do then, or just...
Well, I'll tell you in truth that actually I was not an activist. I was not active in anything. I got a divorce and shortly remarried when I returned to Seattle.
Oh, you remarried in Seattle?
I remarried in Seattle. And and my husband was not a political person. So, I just lived quietly with him.
Yeah. Were you working, though, during
the... Oh, yes, I worked during all of those years. Oh, occasionally, for a few months, or maybe for as long as a year, I'd stay home while my husband worked. Mm-hmm. But I was still a feminist, I tell you frankly, I always had arguments on feminism.
And, how about relationship to your husband?
He was a simple, much simpler person than I am. In fact, he was a simpler person. And he never argued because he couldn't argue. But he accepted all the views, at least tacitly accepted them. I had no objections to any of them. So I just couldn't tell you any more than that. He was not a proper husband for me. But again, I married badly, in that sense. That I didn't have an intellectual companion, and perhaps that kept me inactive.
Yes. See?
Because it's very tough to combine a political life with marriage, unless both partners are active in it. And my husband certainly was not. And I just...
So during this period, your activity really declined?
Yeah, my activity declined. It declined until... After 2 years, it wasn't quite, not just 2 years after his death, about 6 months after his death, I returned back to New York. And heaven knows why, but I returned back to New York. And I was there a year and a half, and returned to San Francisco then, in 1938, in January 1938. And... while in New York, I joined the Office Employees Union, the new one, the CIO one.
Do you remember anything about that union?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember the communists fighting for position. This is the only thing I understood in that union, that there was always a communist argument going on. And I hate to say it because it sounds petty, but their demands were not petty, because they insisted on political recognition as well as the economic one. They were fighting not merely for raises in pay and work benefits. They were fighting for political recognition of the Soviet Union. And at that time, the Soviet Union wasn't recognized until 36, isn't that right? Till 1936. And... so the struggle went on. Now, when I came back west, and this time to San Francisco, because that's where my husband and I lived, in Sausalito, just across from San Francisco, so it was natural for me to return to San Francisco instead of Seattle. I'd been away from Seattle for a number of years. There was no point in going there. And I turned my card in to the Office Employees Union, and that was during the Depression years. Work was very lacking. But again, I noticed it was much easier to recognize the communists in the San Francisco local, because we used to get Brother Bridges, to come there and lecture us, tell us to toe the line or else. That was one of their pet phrases,
So you were fairly active in that union then, beginning.
Yes, I was active in that union. I was active actually until I withdrew from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no business to stop my activity, but it just... It was a retirement thing, and to which I'm really quite against retirement, at least in a political sense. But I was also a member of the Socialist Party, so I was active in the Socialist Party.
So you joined the Office of Employees Union in about 36 or so then in New York.
Well, I joined it in New York.
Somewhere in
New York. Oh, in 36, yeah, I joined it, pardon me, I joined New York in 36, and then I transferred my membership to San Francisco in January 1938.
Now, did you do any organizing for them?
No,
did you
I didn't,
talk,
no.
Try and get other women to join?
But I was, you do whatever you can,
mm-hmm.
and I wrote articles for their paper, sometimes I was commended by the communists, and other times I was commended by the anti-communists. It's just funny because my education began at that time. There were a number of Trotskyites in the local who got interested in me and began to recruit me to the Socialist Workers' Party. And of course, I didn't join it until about 2 years later. But nevertheless, they became my focus of social life, social and political life. And it was a very severe one because I had to read constantly. I had to learn constantly. I realized how ignorant I was about history. And in fact, I was virtually quite ashamed of my ignorance. I really was. I'm making this admission now, and it's, I didn't dare make it at that time. But they were puzzled, first of all, by my intellectualism on the one hand, by my ability to absorb quite a new idea in a very short period, and also by my ignorance, you know, the fact that I have not read. So I know that one of the men in the party thought I was a phenomenon, you know, because I learned so rapidly, and not only, not so much that I learned, but I learned from the top down, see? I started, to me, logic was the only subject that gave me an understanding of the immediate policies in a radical party, or in any party for that matter, see?
Now, did you still encounter resistance about issues related to women?
Yes. My arguments was far more amongst them than it was anywhere else, you know. But it wasn't bitter, you know, and it wasn't frequent. They were supposed to have a notion of equality between all people, you know, and naturally that equality would extend to women as well. So, but whenever I did have an argument, it was quite a sharp one,
mm-hmm.
Because they were really quite intelligent about it.
Was it in terms of?
Well, it was in terms of
their inability to.
It was actually it was in terms of a woman's intellectual ability to absorb knowledge in the same degree that men did, and this is a kind of a stopgap when you discuss feminism with people on that basis, because that's a pretty high basis, you know. But insofar as women in industry or women in politics, they certainly believed in equality, except that there's a claim that so long as you live in a capitalist country, you're not going to get that equality, except that we couldn't turn the society overnight into a socialist one. So therefore, you have to fight for it individually or piece by piece. You know.
Well, within the SWP itself, then, do you think that they really adopted feminist principles in terms of how it was run, in terms of the position of women within the organization and the roles that the women played?
Yeah. We didn't have that. We didn't have such an issue. See, I would remember that because I remember the issues were really political on an extremely high level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just simply inconceivable to even to some of the members they have now how high that level was. Mm-hmm. Don't forget it was a break between a man like Max Shackman and Trotsky, mm-hmm. when Trotsky was still alive, and or it was a break between Max Shackman and Jim Cannon. You know. You have to really know your theories. You can't discuss them otherwise. And of course, the Soviet Union was the major problem in the party, and it was the single one that really split the party. Unfortunately, as I saw it then, and I still see it today, neither side quite understood that issue, except perhaps Max Shackman. But he was very severely anti-communist, you know, and to a degree where he was subjective about it. But the rest of the members, the rank and file members, didn't understand. They formed their alliances on the basis of loyalty to one side or the other, but not on the basis of a real understanding of the issues.
Now, prior to all of this activity in 1938, between the time you married Kettler then,
yeah.
and the time you went to New York, what sort of things were you still working in union offices?
No, I was not. I said that was the period in which I was, I worked, but not in union offices.
Oh, so you didn't even work in union offices?
No, I didn't.
Really
not anymore. I really dropped out. I was leading a kind of a domestic mm-hmm. life, you know. And as I said, if my husband had been political, even to a larger degree, I would have been involved in something. You know.
Okay. I was a clerk here working with you. Now, at that point, did you feel you wanted children as well?
Did what?
Did you feel you wanted children during this more domestic stage of your life?
Actually, I don't think that I ever had a desire for children. I like children very much, especially babies, you know. But I had no desire of my own, and perhaps that was due to an attitude towards bringing a child into this kind of a world, you know. And also, I don't want to discuss the rest. It's a part of my personal life. But I had no great passion for children, to have children. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that I had no great passion for children because I love them, but I had no passion to have my own children. So, and I'm glad of that. I'm really glad it happened that way because I've seen too much unhappiness in families since then. And it was always, the unhappiness always arose in the activity between parents and their children. So it was just...
It wasn't an active decision that you wouldn't be able to work or pursue what you wanted to do.
No, it was actually, it was just a decision, you know, that I made regarding, so...
Okay, so during...
You know, those years were the dead years of my life, you know, as I say. They were not dead insofar as my memory of them is concerned. But politically, they were dead years. The only time that I arose to any kind of opinion was during the Moscow trials. Mm-hmm. And I knew a great deal about them. And I had an anarchist friend who used to be an editor of a Seattle paper during the years that I lived there. And I have a habit of seeing both sides of an issue, that in spite of my disappointment in what happened after the Russian Revolution and my disagreement with Soviet policies, I could see from their point of view the necessity to get rid of the Central Committee. But from my point of view, I was horrified by it. Well, I mentioned this to my anarchist friend, and he took me by the scruff of the neck and threw me out of his house. Now, I thought that he was highly emotional about it, if he couldn't sit down and try to correct me, see? That because if I was wrong, I should have been corrected. I shouldn't have been thrown out because I made the error, mm-hmm. you know, of one sentence that annoyed him so much that it angered him to such a degree that he threw me out of the house.
See? So you were still really... Even though you weren't involved,
I was always political. I was always political. I was never non-political mm-hmm. or not interested in it. You know. I read the papers every day, and I knew what was going on. And so that even during those dead years, I was still a mm-hmm. political person and interested in politics and did a certain amount of reading, but nothing basic.
Then during the, okay, then beginning with...
For instance, when I say nothing basic, I hadn't read Marx or I hadn't read mm-hmm. Lenin or Trotsky. Not until I came to San Francisco mm-hmm. and met the Trotskyite people.
So beginning in 1938, then when you returned to San Francisco, is that when you had that job with the, to screen people for WPA?
Well, that was, yes, I returned in 38, yes, that's right. But that was much later, that was later in 38. It must have been about at least the middle, if not later, than 1930, then perhaps August, September, I don't know.
What did you, so you transferred your...
I applied... You see, I mean, when you ask me about the WPA, you know, you reach a point where there are no jobs and you have to have money, you have to live. So I applied for to the WPA, and they put you through the regular role, the SRA thing, and then you're qualified, and then you're sent to the WPA, and the WPA places you on a project. And I think my first project was with the police. And the police, you know, were then registering all the guns that were sold and so on. I don't know how long I was there. I was with the Writers Project for a while. I was with a Sutter collected material from all over the world, you know, and all kinds of materials, some radical, some conservative, and so on. And I worked on that project. And the last project I worked with was the music project. I worked altogether for about three projects.
And that was
in 39. Uh-huh. And then I was kicked out and told to go and get a private job. And that's when I got a job with the unions.
And is that when you got a job with the seat, with the...
Well, I don't know. See, I worked for the Bakers Union. I worked for a number of unions. It was... With a seaman, not the Seaman's Union, the Marine Cooks and Stewards Union.
And it was always in office work?
Office work, oh yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, all the work that I ever did in unions was in office work. But of course I was active in unions, at least vocally active in unions, so that I belonged to the 10% of the official corps. I'd be sergeant at arms. You know, that's the most at the office that they would give me.
Now, was this in the office employees or in whatever unit
this
you
is
were
the office,
working
for? No, this was the office employees. I worked out of the office employees union and who had contracts with all the union offices in San Francisco. I forgot that was in San Francisco. That was in San Francisco. I have to remember. You know, I get mixed up because in 48 I came down to Los Angeles. But the Office Employees Union is sometimes misunderstood. They have contracts with all union offices, you know, so that when they're in need of a stenographer, typist, or temporary worker, permanent